Now, before we bring on our superintendent of public instruction, Glenda Ritz, many of you listening, and Chris remembers, the saga of Little Flanner House Charter Schools, that back in 2012, they took the iRead for the first time, and nearly every, they had the lowest scores in iRead of any school in Indiana, and they got beat up real bad. And then when the iStep test came out, those same third graders knocked it out of the park in iStep. And I, at the time, told Glenda Ritz's predecessor, said, predecessor, can you explain this? And he said, oh, that's an anomaly. I don't know what anomaly means, but in other words, he didn't figure that out. So this year, in the iSteps that were released an hour and 28 minutes ago, let me tell you the scores for Flanner House Elementary. Now, this is for all, because the state has not yet released the scores for different ethnic groups or free and reduced lunch. So the normal thing that we do on this program and break it down for African Americans, I got to wait a few days or a week or so, and that's cool. But I got to brag about Flanner House. Their score, this is their combined score for all of their third through sixth graders. English Language Arts Superintendent, 97.6% passed.
That's exciting.
How about math? 97.6% passed. How about the percentage that passed both the math and the English Language Arts? 95.3% passed. Flanner House was so tough, they beat Tinley, both of the Tinleys. Now, if you all are listening to this program in the mayor's charter school office, because Little Birds told me that somebody in the mayor's charter school office does not believe these scores. They think it's a fluke. They think something worse. Do not touch Flanner House. You're going to have me and a whole lot of mamas, daddies, grandmas, and grandpas. If you believe the other scores are legit, don't question this one. Don't mess with me on this one. Anyway, with that, we have the introduction, because iStep is out, and there was all this mess and the taint and the what have you. Hoosier Kids did show some progress, including even IPS showed some progress. The Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz, joins me live. Welcome.
Thank you, Amos.
With all that we went through, and more importantly, the kids and the school districts and the parents, all the stress, are you pleased with at least the results that you've seen that's now been released and parents and schools have seen them?
Well, first of all, I'm pleased that we actually had a plan mm-hmm. to make sure all students had a good testing situation after the interruptions. Mm-hmm. So that proved out to be what happened. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to actually use the data. We only had about 1,400 students statewide that actually had invalidated test scores due to the interruptions. So we were pleased that we could use the data. Unfortunately, I will say at the same time, since it's come out so late, schools didn't get to use the data for what it's typically used for,
right.
Making sure that we have kids in summer school programs that should be there, about school retention or passing of grades, and even placement of students at the fall. So I will say that the actual use of the data this year was pretty minimal.
So that now a school or a parent, particularly a kid that's kind of close to the cut score, close to the score that you either pass or you didn't pass, they can appeal. So will this change scores any a lot, or just like a little decimal point here, a decimal point there?
Well, actually, what parents and schools both should understand is that the appeal process is only for the application part of the test.
Now, what's the application part?
It was taken in March.
Okay.
Is where the students do actual writing samples.
The writing in the
correct,
and like you do the math part
correct,
on the paper.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So it was all paper and pencil, and they are actually doing all of the process work. That's the only portion okay. of the iStep test that can be appealed.
It used to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, can parents and students see those answers? Is that still part of the process? At one point it was.
Well, I believe that those have been handed out.
Okay.
They have the schools have the results back.
Okay.
Yes. And so now they're actually looking at the appeal process.
All right. So we now move forward, and eventually there will be an iStep in the spring of 2014. And I guess McGraw-Hill's going to do it, huh? You got faith in them?
Well, I hope so. We're putting in measures to make sure that we're not going to have the issues that we had last year, for sure. Mm-hmm. They've got server already. They've got that implemented. We're going to do some stress tests next year. Mm-hmm. We didn't do that this year to the extent that should have been done. And so that wasn't planned ahead of time to make that happen as it should. And so we're going to make sure that the practice tests perhaps are all taken at the same time so that we can see the stress load of that. So we're going to put some measures in place to be sure that that's taken care of.
Is this also a lesson for all of these schools, including universities, that do stuff online, that they better invest in some more servers and invest in what if every student, in your system decides to get on the computer at the same time?
Yeah, you betcha. You have to be ready for that. And we were, in the very high 90% of students actually being online with the multiple choice portion of the test. So we just, CTB, in our opinion, simply wasn't prepared for that type of load in two different times. Okay. And so that's what caused all the interruptions.
We're talking with Glenda Ritz, the superintendent of public instruction, 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. All right, so this A to F grading thingamajiggy, where are we?
Well, we have a panel, and it's been established, and the governor appointed four people. And so did the Senate and the House, and then my department. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting ready to convene on Thursday.
Okay.
It'll be our very first meeting. The meeting will be spent largely on a lot of background information and parameters that we must adhere to, either at the federal or state level, mm-hmm. When we actually look at the type of system that we're going to develop.
Are we at risk if we don't come up with a system of being in default? We had a federal waiver under No Child Left Behind that allowed us to do an accountability system?
Well, actually not. Okay. We already have an A to F system in the waiver, mm-hmm. And it's in effect. Mm-hmm. And so it will remain in effect until we renew the waiver.
Okay.
At the time of the renewal of the waiver, certainly we would have a new accountability system, and there would be an amendment to that waiver. But, the public at large, they need to know that really – the accountability system that we put together has to have a peer review at the federal level.
Mm.
So there's a process we're going to be going through as we go through the process.
One of the things this committee going to be looking at is the use of penalty points. In other words, if you didn't grow enough, you get a penalty point, which always struck me as if grades go down, okay, I can see getting a penalty if you go down. But if you go up by somewhat, getting penalized, I always thought was just totally unfair. Is that within the scope of this committee?
Actually, we're going to totally redo the growth measure piece.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're required to.
Okay. By the legislature?
By law. So currently we have in the system scores were compared with peers, mm-hmm. student peers around the state of Indiana, right. And then we estimated how much they should grow. And then that's
estimate.
What we did. There was an estimate on how far they should grow compared to their peers around the state of Indiana.
Right.
So now we will not be using that model. It's mm-hmm. prohibited.
Right.
We're going to be using a model in which we look at the student's own growth at the student's own school.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to be looking at comparative ways in which to validate growth in a whole different manner with a student compared to themselves.
Is one of the things, the report that the two budget analysts that were appointed by the legislative leaders said, hey, if y'all change this, test it. Pick 15, they didn't give a number, but it implied pick a group of schools and run the numbers and test it and see, does this make any sense?
Something you should always do. It's called beta testing.
Beta testing.
And you have to make sure that you should do that throughout the rulemaking process.
Mm-hmm.
The State Board of Ed will actually initiate rulemaking.
Okay.
And throughout that process, that time period, you need to be sure that you're testing what it is that you're actually going to put in writing in a rule. So that when you're ready to have the rule approved, you already know what's going to be there for the running of the
scores.
So
we'll be picking a basket of schools, urban schools, suburban schools, one-room schoolhouses somewhere, schools that everybody knows, hey, that's a great school, schools that kind of people say, that's not the greatest school in the world, and put them all together and see how that group tests out? Is that the best way to do it?
Well, you can, but you actually can run it on all the schools.
Okay.
Once you put the formula and you get your computer pieces up, and you should be able to see what every what it's going to do to all schools. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the part that I would probably recommend, not just a small pilot here and there, mm-hmm. but actually to really see what it's going to do. I just want to have the rule written appropriately so that the department doesn't have to make policy regarding the rule after it's written, that everybody knows what.
So this is one where you want the state board, hey, y'all come up with this, and then I'll implement what y'all come up with. Should it include other factors like, you know, how well does the school do parental engagement? You know, what's the vibe at the school? Because I think New York includes those kind of things. The Chicago schools include that. And I think Arizona has a unique system where they got one system for charters. They got one system for another kind of school. They got one system for a third kind of school.
I anticipate we will have dialogue about multiple measures. Mm-hmm. Currently, the elementary and middle school have just the test.
Right.
So I would assume that we are going to have that dialogue. We already had the dialogue about it with high school.
Because mm-hmm. our graduation rate.
Correct. And several other components. They had AP work in there. So they had different components within their system. So we are allowed to talk about multiple measures. Mm-hmm. Those multiple measures need to be measurable by the federal government standards. So we'll have to have quite a bit of dialogue about what those might look like.
Let me go to Denise at 239-1310 with the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Hi, Denise.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question regarding the I had a call from the principal of my daughter's school on yesterday. She's in fourth grade in Lawrence Township. And she informed me the reason for the call was to let me know that during the testing, she was one of the students that was repeatedly kicked out of the testing system and that her scores would come back reflecting an undetermined score rather than points. I just wanted to get some clarification on what that means for her in the future, being that she doesn't have actual test scores to be reflected upon going forward.
Well, several things. Yes, ma'am, I will be glad to address that. First of all, I was insistent that you should have availability to all of the information regarding your child's score. So you should have the actual record that you look at regarding her scores. Will have all of the information there for you. We did not give you a zeroed out report. Normally, an undetermined report, you would get no information because you had no total score. What you received this year because of the interruptions, and I was insistent upon it, because students weren't interrupted on all of the assessment pieces. They were only interrupted on some. And so you should have a report out by category in math and language arts, all the scores that your daughter earned. And there's valuable information in that because, you know, the school knows which ones were interrupted and which weren't. But the only thing you won't be given is a total score. Now, that doesn't have any bearing on what goes forward for your daughter in her file. It'll be reported that way. But in terms of all of the data on how she did in every segment, that information's still there.
Is Denise's daughter considered pass, didn't pass, or a third category?
It would be undetermined.
Undetermined.
That's not
a negative. Somebody 2 or 3 years down the road that maybe comes into Indiana, into the Lawrence Township schools, doesn't know the history, looks at the record and determines and says, Denise's daughter didn't do well in fourth grade.
Well,
what's the protection for that?
There's actually some paragraphs written underneath there that talk about what undetermined means.
And so she's one of the 1,400?
Evidently, if that's what she is saying, if it was due to interruptions. If it was due to interruptions, then all the information was reported out for every subject matter. And they probably were only undetermined for, like, just math.
Denise, is that what
you... And maybe not language arts.
Is what the superintendent is saying, is that what the documents you've seen on your daughter?
As of yet, I have not pulled the documents. I was told that they will be available to view online as of today, so I plan on doing that.
Wait. When you just said as of today, the superintendent gives me this look. You should have had access to that a couple of weeks ago. September 9th. And if they didn't tell you that on September 9th, the school did not do their job.
No, he just informed me yesterday.
Wait a minute. What school is this in Lawrence Township?
It's Oakland in elementary.
I bet one of the community outreach people from the Department of Education is going to call Oak Landon and make sure that every parent, no, serious business, every parent right after Labor Day was supposed to get access to their kids' scores for ISTEP. So if you just found out yesterday, that's not the way the game was supposed to be played. Superintendent.
Is that maybe why I got a personal call from the principal yesterday then?
You should have had the personal call when the school had access to the scores.
No, they're just now sending home the link for me to pull up.
Just now?
Yesterday. And as a matter of fact, there was an automated phone call generated yesterday evening that reflected the same information for just ordering parents to check backpacks and things for that form so that we are able to pull up the scores. And I just got that form yesterday.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you got a phone call about the undetermined, because that's good. But on your daughter's actual report that you should see and have access to now, it actually is a report that is directly from CTB McGraw-Hill. It takes you right into their portal. That was available September 9, not only to parents but to schools. And you should have had prior to that information on how to access that portal, because that's when the information was to be available to parents. What has come out now this week and that Amos is talking about is school-wide data, corporation data, some data in which they can really dig down and find some information regarding their students and schools and start to process the information.
Yeah, because Denise, they wanted the Superintendent Ritz in her office wanted parents and schools to know the scores before us wonderful people in the media. And So if they didn't tell you till yesterday, that ain't good. Yeah, you need to, I bet you somebody not only going to call the school, somebody's going to call Dr. Raimondi before she leaves out of Lawrence Township and say something's wrong up in there.
Yes.
But
elaborate on that. It kind of took me by surprise to receive that call yesterday without any prior knowledge. So.
No, absolutely. And the other thing is you go onto the computer, you look at it and be able to look at your daughter's report and tell her she didn't do anything wrong. Okay?
Okay. Thanks, Amos.
All right. Appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 with the Superintendent of Public Instruction. When we come back, we'll ask her about Common Core. We'll talk about, do we need the United Nations to come in and mediate between her and the State Board of Education and that Daniel Elsner guy? Other stuff for the good of the order. It's After News with Amos. After these. With the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. Where are we on this Common Core thing?
Well, we're in the process of reviewing the standards. Mm-hmm. In 2010, the state of Indiana adopted the Common Core as its standards, and all teachers are teaching the Common Core standards currently in our schools, and we're getting ready to review those standards. So the committees have been established, and advisory teams are being formed, and we're going to begin the process of looking at the standards and deciding if there's any changes we might need to make to them.
Now, there was a change in the ISTEP science test. Some standards were changed. This wasn't Common Core, was it?
No.
This was some other change.
Yeah, science standards. You're talking about social studies that are coming
up?
Was
it social studies? I think it was in the release that came out yesterday. It said that the science content on this year's ISTEP was based on new science standards adopted in 2010. I didn't know whether that was Common Core or some other standards.
It was just a revision of our standards.
Okay, and so that data is coming out in the
a little bit later, right?
Who does the cut scores?
Actually, the cut scores are determined by a committee group,
right. Uh-huh.
And then it's taken to the round table.
It is?
Yes, it is.
I'm on the round table. I don't remember taking a vote on a cut score.
It's coming September 25 to the round table.
Oh, that's what we're doing at the meeting that they haven't told anybody about yet.
Well, I hope they are telling you about it.
I haven't seen an agenda yet.
Well, that's true. I understand that that's in the process. It is.
Speaking of that, now what is with y'all in the State Board of Education? It seemed like at the last meeting they was trying to, they put stuff on the agenda you didn't know about, and you're sitting there at the meeting. How can somebody have a public meeting and not have anything on the agenda?
Well, I am responsible for providing the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
You provided an agenda for them.
Yes.
And then they just added stuff onto it.
Well, no.
No?
We both work on that agenda jointly, and we put out the agenda.
Okay.
There were two resolutions brought to the meeting. mm-hmm. that one I was totally unaware of. Mm-hmm. The other I had just gotten word of it the night before. We have some board operations, right. Of which, you know, if we have action items, we want those to be at least 10 days in advance so people know about them. I had the right to say, you know, it hasn't followed procedure, mm-hmm. and I noted that. Mm-hmm. I still let the votes go through. Mm-hmm. I still let them go ahead and do the resolutions. But I will tell you, the resolutions, I abstained on one and I voted no on the other. I truly believe that strategic planning is an entire group matter, mm-hmm. and not for a small committee to deal with. Mm-hmm. And also, we have the issue of the State Board of Education through the governor's office hiring their own staff now. And so that's what the other resolutions were regarding.
Somebody sent me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. A simple question. It says, if a parent claims their children are being homeschooled, but they aren't, who do concerned parents contact? Also, are homeschool children monitored?
There is very little in law that allows for any monitoring of homeschooling. Mm-hmm. They have to sign up. There's a sign-up process piece for that, but there's no tracking of actually mm-hmm. who's actually in the system or who's mm-hmm. is everyone signing up that actually says they're doing homeschooling. Right. So there's very little that goes on with that. I know that's a concern, and I've gotten emails about that. It's a legislative issue in part regarding homeschooling. So, I think it needs to be addressed. I think we have what I would call, in some instances, homeschooling that's being declared but not happening. And I know I've gotten some emails about from people who are concerned that students are not getting schooling.
Now, you got Leroy Robinson, who is a city county councilor here in Indianapolis, former administrator at Pike Township. He is working in your office. What is he? He's like the outreach guy. You got all these outreach people.
I do. We have a new division called Outreach, and it's giving grassroots support to schools, individual schools. We have 13 coordinators around the state of Indiana in the 9 different congressional districts. Leroy happens to be the director of Outreach. He works with Teresa Brown, who is the assistant superintendent of Outreach. And then they have 5 other support staff at the department. And we are in contact with the schools right on the ground. And so schools who are in academic watch, they are going to get the most attention. And we will know their school improvement
plans
already.
That's the D schools.
D's and F's. Mm-hmm. And we will know their school improvement plans already. We'll know what supports are already in place and what we need to get in place. It'll be a community approach. We're going to be working with schools to be sure that we've got all services for students. Very student-driven.
When I looked at the results for ISTEP for 7th and 8th grades in the takeover schools, including Gary Roosevelt, they were not well. They were just horrendous scores. How concerned are you about that, or does that pressure now go, particularly in Indianapolis, to the mayor's charter school office? Because they have now the direct oversight?
Oh, no. The monitoring needs to be intense. And we are the mayor's office and my office are using the same template now and the same rubric, so we can actually do some comparative work. And so the department will be responsible for the Edison School up there in Gary, and we are going to be doing heavy monitoring. It's required.
Were you surprised at least at the middle school level, the poor performance of the takeovers?
Well, I guess we need to ascertain from a variety of areas, and not just the scores.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about school culture. Mm. You know, what's in place? Do we have safety procedures in place? Do we have discipline procedures? Do we have positive behavior supports? Do we have parent engagement? I mean, we're talking about an entire school culture here. So we need to look at a lot of aspects, not just the test scores.
One of the things when we will get the data released for African American and see how African American students not only did in IPS but did in the township schools and some of the charter schools as well, there are schools like Tinley, like Flannery House, like the Speedway, schools where African Americans are, and the suburban schools, they're performing well. Are those places we can go to learn? If they can figure out how to reduce the achievement gap, how do you clone that?
Well, basically, I think you do that by doing a comprehensive study of their school culture. It takes strong leadership. Leadership is a must, and that's what our school improvement piece is going to be all about with our outreach. For the first time, Amos, in the state of Indiana, we're going to actually – here's the benchmark that you need to have on a great school, and where are you on a continuum to getting there? We're actually going to be putting in an electronic template, and for the first time, we're going to be talking about equity and high quality all over the state of Indiana with a student-focused accountability. So let me give you one quick example. If all students in the state of Indiana should have Wi-Fi access for the use of technology and have a device, whether it's brought from home or supplied by the school, if all students should have that in the state of Indiana, for the first time, we're going to be able to pull up data that actually tells us which schools do not have that in place. And then we're going to start targeting and focusing our efforts. So if it's widespread issue, it might take legislative action. If it is more regional, it might take some very specific grant writing to make things happen.
Would that also concern our rural schools? Because I know there are issues of Wi-Fi in the rural areas, and the farmers can't get the Wi-Fi to be able to do what they need to do with taking care of the crops.
And so let me tell you one instance that we have going on. In one of our regional areas, we actually have a U.S. agricultural grant that's putting in Wi-Fi for the farmers and Wi-Fi for for the schools. So we have ways in which we can tap into resources and piggyback on other resources you may not think that could serve our schools. So then if we have a local issue, we'll be talking to mayors, city councilmen, you know, businessmen in the community areas in which we can get these issues resolved. Because I'm about equity and high quality, and we got to have equal resources. All kids, no matter what school they go to, should expect certain things to be happening in their schools.
Let me go to Chanel right quick for the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Hi, Chanel.
Hi. I thought for the homeschool kids, I thought like sometime in the year they had to go take a state to make take like a state test to make sure that they are learning.
I don't believe there's any state assessment for homeschoolers.
Well, maybe that's what they should do then. And then on top of that, if you're being homeschooled and you're not really home learning, it's going to catch up to you, and it's going to be your downfall.
Well, that's true. It would be awful hard to get into college or career ready.
Right.
That's an excellent.
And then also another thing, I don't know if Amy's just like kind of touched on this. I'm going to kind of piggyback. But why can't you adopt some of the charter school ways? Like this lady, she told me her son, they made him go home because he didn't have his hair cut, and they don't play that. And then my nieces go there. If you kind of get between like a B and a C, they are not going to let you go any further. They're going to help you catch up before you get to a C or a D.
Oh, best practices should be everywhere, and we've got best practices in all types of schools. And yes, they should be replicated. Definitely.
Is it also? I know Carpe Diem was looking at their overall ISTEP at the least at the middle school level, and they had an excellent opening performance. And I know, in talking to the founder of that school as he was building it here, they believe very strongly in having individualized, personal individual plans for every student. Is that also one of the things your outreach coordinators are looking at? Is, you know, what is the plan for students? You know, are you only taking care of the students that you know are going to be A and Bs, and you're letting other students kind of slough off?
Well, Amos, I tell you that we get closer to that when we have a transformation of our assessment system. Our assessment system right now in the state of Indiana is pass-fail, and that's what it is. So fifth graders have to take a test of the fifth grade bottom and a fifth grade ceiling, and that's all we know about them from ISTEP. I'm hoping to transform to growth model measures so we really know where our students are performing, what level they are performing at, and then we put in interventions to move them where they need to go. That kind of data isn't available on a statewide basis to us and should be because that is about personalizing instruction. And so I'm a special ed teacher. And I've also taught the gifted for 6 years, so I've taught the entire spectrum of students. And I believe in individualization, that we should be paying attention to the student-centered accountability that we need to have in place. So, yeah, but I think we've got some things that we have to build in the system to make sure that that's going to occur.
There is a law in the state of Indiana that requires public agencies, if a member of the public asks for records kept by that agency, that government agency, if that record exists, has to give it up. There are some exceptions for certain things with personnel. There are exceptions with certain things with contracts, but it is a fairly rigid law. Now, some government agencies try to stall people to do that. Mayor's Office of Indianapolis, Indy Parks. You all didn't. Is it fair to say that
the ethos of your office is you follow the law, and that includes the public records law of Indiana?
Oh, most definitely. And we believe in transparency. So we want to be right up front with whatever data it is or whatever information might be requested. The FOIA request, it is very strict, and we just comply with it.
Have you instructed your staff, put your personal business on your personal email and leave government business only on the email servers of the Department of Education?
Are you talking about me personally?
I'm talking about your staff.
Me personally.
Yes. Your...
Well, yes, we've been instructed that our use of our work computers are for work. Mm-hmm. I know I have a separate phone. Mm-hmm. You know, for my government use, mm-hmm. and I have my personal phone for mm-hmm. my personal use. Mm-hmm. So, I think all the agencies pretty much have policies that speak to that. We have our own handbook. We have our own policies regarding email and use of it and use of equipment at the government.
I just wanted to bring that up because there's some people that you know, have pointed fingers at your agency, you know, because, you know, a member of the media came and asked y'all to give up the, you know, and follow the law, and you follow the law. And I just wish those same people that point a finger at you would point a finger at Indy Parks and the mayor of Indianapolis's office that continue to refuse to give documents to the media. But let me go to Mia right quick with the superintendent of public instruction. Hi, Mia.
Hi, how you doing? Hi, Amos. Hi, Miss Glenda.
Hello.
I have a question. My question is, where does the special needs fall in place? A lot of people have the tendency of leaving them out. I mean, you have problems in IPS. They can't teach the special needs. You got a problem like yesterday, Pike Township. I know it was one of them. And Warren Township, where do they fit in at? You got some charter schools who can't even teach the special needs or get the test right. It seems like to me that the special needs kids is being left out. And to my understanding, more of these schools is more populations with special needs kids than any other places. So what exactly can we do to help these special needs kids?
Well, I will tell you that I am a special education teacher, and I have we have a very robust special education department now, and so we are there to address issues. We are aware of some school systems that are not addressing issues as they should be with special education students, and I can tell you that we're getting to be on top of that. And when we get complaints, we actually process those and work through those and find out what's going on. So I guess I just want to assure you that at the Department of Education under my watch, special needs students are of great importance to me.
All right. Appreciate that. And I guess Wednesday you get to co-chair your first education roundtable meeting. And the issue of full disclosure, I'm a member of the roundtable. I can't miss this because you and the governor are going to be sitting together. Have you all worked out what's going to happen?
Well, I guess, we almost have finalized the agenda. So, okay. You know, we have to vote. Jointly agree on mm-hmm. the agenda. So, yes, that's going to take place on the 25th.
All right. I can't wait for this. You don't have to say, I thought to sell tickets.
I don't know that it's going to be a large agenda, Amos.
You never know. Somebody may try to bring something. No, I'm not. One final thing. Earlier we talked about diversity in your staff. Mm-hmm. I know you had diversity and you appointed a principal from one of the elementary schools up in Gary.
I did.
To this accountability. There's only two minorities. You appointed an African-American. The governor appointed a Latino. The legislative leaders don't know what minority means, but that's a whole other story. How about the rest of the diversity, particularly in the executive staff of the Department of Education?
Well, I am very proud to have hired Bernice Corley as mm-hmm. our general counsel. Mm-hmm. She's just top notch. I meet with her so many times. Mm-hmm. But we are cognizant of that all the time. And mm-hmm. as you mentioned, Leroy Robinson, mm-hmm. He serves at a very high level for us as well. But we have, I think we have a very, very good, robust staff of minority at the Department of Education. And I'm actually proud of that. We make sure that we are seeking out candidates making sure that happens.
She's the superintendent of public instruction, Glenda Ritz. Always good to see you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.